This Fab FM podcast is proudly brought to you by Bendigo Bank, Port Douglas and Mossman, offering a full range of competitive banking products and technology you'd expect from a big bank with the personal service and care you'd expect from us. Drop into your nearest branch at Port Village Shopping Centre or Front Street Mossman. Bendigo Bank, the better big bank.
The proposed hydrogen microgrid in the Daintree is a step closer to reality when the man who was in charge of getting all the information together on the grid gave his most up-to-date update today. The crowd at the Dewan Sports Complex was made up of a bunch of eclectic people, from those dead against the idea to those shouting from the rainforest canopy to let there be power, and some, I suspect, who may have been persuaded to embrace the idea in principle. Present also was Douglas Shire councillors Lisa Scommerzon, who's also, of course, the deputy mayor, Peter McEwen, and surprisingly, Roy Zamataro, who has stated publicly in the past he doesn't want a bar of the hydrogen grid. Federal MP and our local member Warren Ench was there with bells on and considers this project his baby and will see it through to the end. And of course, this grid power would be clean and green and do away mostly with those diesel-spewing generators that continue to pollute one of our greatest assets. Richard Schoeneman, who has been carrying out the feasibility study funded by the federal government, says the world's first project is on track despite the age of COVID. This is a man who is totally focused on an end result, and a man who wants to protect the environment in his search for power. Not his personally, of course, but for everyone in the Daintree who wants it. His report today was chock full of information for locals.
There were about 20 milestones that the engineering study needed to complete. Most of those are now complete. That started with looking at the area and the loads that needed to be served. Who was using what power, who would be using what power in the future. That moved into what's called a protection coordination study, so very technical engineering type of work, where we looked at how the assets would be protected under different scenarios electrically, how things would be switched, where would they go. There's a whole lot of engineering studies that needed to be done that would then culminate in a design at the end of it. You can't build a house without a design. If you don't have a plan, you can't get finance for a house without a plan, so we needed to do a plan, which is what this process is really about. Going hand in hand with that to get approvals, we've got construction manuals and cost models. We've got soil stability tests and you know, locational, to have a plan on where things are going. We've got designs and route plans on where the actual cables would go. There's two parts in a power system, really. Well, there's actually three parts. There's the customer consuming the power. Start with that. There's the electrical reticulation, so the grid or the network itself, and there's the generation. In this case, about where the generation would go, we've got a number of options where we could put it, all on privately owned non-wet tropics, non-national park sites with already cleared land, and that would be solar, obviously, that would need to host. The rest of the equipment would be containerized. And when I say the rest of the equipment, I'm talking about the storage, because if we're going to oversize the solar so we can provide you all 100% renewable energy, we need to have a lot of storage to cut through the periods when there isn't high solar irradiance. In terms of the electrical reticulation assets, we're well aware this is World Heritage Area. There's a lot of overlays. There are already, as I mentioned in the previous study, the intention, there are already easements and roadways which are infrastructure assets that are owned by council. And it's not, we don't have any intention to go outside of those roadways. That will make it obviously easier from an approvals point of view, but the most appealing thing with that is it means obviously there's no disturbance to the natural habitat and the natural environment. So, you know, that requires an amount of drilling through roads or cable ploughing. Again, happy to talk offline about the detail of that, through the easements and between basically the table drains, the drains and the roads. And some of you might have already noticed that there's already a precedent there, because you've got cables in the roads here, you know, Telstra cables. One other thing that I'd probably like to add, just in terms of our design, you know, obviously there'd be conduit in the ground in those areas. Some of them will be directionally drilled. We've had conversations with Telstra, other telecommunications providers up here, And we're putting in fibre, which is for the comps. So there is potential there for Telstra and whatever other providers want to use that and improve the communications for people. We'll be using it, the operator will be using it to improve to have a smarter grid, basically, to know where outages are. They're certainly interested in having, taking out some of their own costs, I guess, and seeing some of the synergy benefits of having comms already in the ground at the same time. That will improve people's internet and general communications, which I know can be patchy here. I think I've said this before at a couple of the meetings. This is optional. A lot of people have said it. It's going to go past your driveway. If you're not interested, don't connect. No. If it doesn't affect you, why would you take away someone else's enjoyment? I guess it's one of the principles of this conversation. So at the end of this piece of work and the scope of work, we'll have a fully fledged design. It'll be fully costed. There's about 100 assets for which we've gone out to the market to get costs. Some vendors are very forthcoming and don't mind you sharing their cost data, and some of them are concerned that their competitors are going to find out what that is. So they, bind you to legal agreements. From here, we would need to go and move to financial close with an investor, effectively. That investor would then commence the construction of the asset, and you would receive, if you were interested, what's called a connection agreement, the electrical rules and all the rest of it by which you connect. It might say you're a residential premises, not a blast furnace, so you'll have this much load. That'll be your connection, and hence this is what will be your tariff, this is what will be your cost going forward. So they're the types of things that you can expect, and that's no different from living in a grid connected world with Energex or Ergon. The intent of this study is to look at and the designs is to look at what's the required investment and what's the required government contribution to allow people who live here to pay the same price as everyone else pays. Now, we don't all have a uniform price in Australia because we have a national electricity market, but roughly within those ballparks of what everyone else pays, the 28 cents a kilowatt hour or whatever that is. So that's the intent of what it should cost people. Would you get a feed-in tariff? Absolutely. So if we want to make it 100% renewable for this area, we're going to need anywhere between 6 and 10 megawatts of solar panels, which is, a number of hectares, probably about 6, maybe 8, of hectares of solar panels at a site. And the reason of that is that's then oversized, and the idea is the excess solar is then stored so that you can make sure you're fed off either hydrogen or stored battery power rather than diesel, gas, or whatever other type of, hydrocarbon or liquid fuels you would burn to make electricity. But either at one site or a number of sites, up to 10 megawatts of panels. Some people like that. I don't find it unattractive myself. Some people don't. You already have them as you drive into town. I guess the other thing is you would need, and we've opted for containerized systems, so you're not going to see power stations. Everything's going to fit within containers for visuals and also for actual. Now, we're aware of the climate here. The engineer company that we've engaged to do most of our technical work, Arcadis, is a global company with a whole lot of experience building power systems around the world. In challenging environments like the Highlands of PNG, they're aware of what you need to do. Containers is the other aspect to it. And beyond that, not a lot. You're not going to see the cables underground. Some of you will be familiar when you drive to Cairns and you see the underground suburbs and you see some small pillar boxes. There might be some of them around. But beyond that, I think the only other interesting thing is we've opted for dry-type transformers as opposed to the general oil-based transformers. Dry-type transformers are epoxy resin-based. It means that if a transformer faults, it's rare but happens, it doesn't spill oil into the environment like a lot of the unbundled diesel generation sites currently do. So it's a very sensitive design. It's going on council roadways. It's going underground. Yes, you would see solar panels if you drove to those sites. Does that bother you? Do you already see solar panels? I don't know. It's all relative, right? We're not talking about a large power system like you might have the one that feeds Brisbane or feeds Cairns or anything like that. And it depends on the mix and the loads as to how many they go in. So, like I said, we've got options at the moment for more hydrogen, fewer batteries, more batteries, fewer hydrogen. Ultimately, so both of which get us to 100% renewable. Both have their pros and cons. And it will be up to the investor and the approvals that are granted, the permits, as to which of those two it will be. Something that's going to fit within a relatively small block. It'll be on this side of the range. The preferred site is on this side of the range. The preferred sites are on this side of the range. I'm not able to share those at the moment. So that would come through the approval process. When an investor comes on and signs up, that's when you would lock in that. Up until then, it's just an option. Yeah, you've got to go to council, absolutely, beyond at that point there. So there's only so much we can pre-approve. And when an investor comes along and says, right, we're going to do this, that's when they would lock in those sites. Yeah, so the load model, the generation load model, has already looked at the last 20 years of cloud cover and rain in working out how big the system needs to be for that. So the intention is not to build a renewable system and then run back up the run diesel through those periods or something like that. But yes, that has been calculated in the design of the system. The intention is gas back up in case the systems fail, in case there's a critical failure, in the same way as any general system has that. You know, it's just that it's primarily run unless it's out of action for a, you know, major event like the landslide that happened. You know, things like that do happen. There is a backup plan for that. So that, you know, the next stage is about contracts. The people who are going to build the grid may not necessarily be the people who run it. That might be done under contract, but it's likely that they will be. What I'd call a long list of about 30 investors that we've talked to, and that ranges from people who already do this type of asset, like run it, you know, utilities who run isolated systems, to funds who would, and we haven't even gone overseas. We had a lot of interest from that, but we haven't gone overseas looking for funds and investors. You know, my preference would be, and I think that would be that it was someone local, obviously, my personal preference. I won't get to make that decision ultimately, but if we, in this next process where we go to financial close, if we put the right KPIs in place, you know, that actually judge what's a successful investor, then you'll pick the right one.
There has been so many cockamamie stories and false information tossed up during this debate over the grid and power into the Daintree. Like, they will be running conduit through creeks.
We're not going through creeks. And those, all of those issues have been taken out of it. We have spent our time wisely understanding what the constraints are.
Just before we have cables along the bridges and culverts. We'll be paralleling with Telstra infrastructure. So it's already, every side road has got the Telstra cabling in there, so we'll be running in parallel to Telstra's infrastructure, which minimises any disturbance along all the roadside. So all that's been looked at.
No, we're not going there. No, that's, sorry. So, well, I mean, I do want to go through 30 culverts and bridges now. I've got maps, but so we're not running our conduits in the Telstra pits. No. I think what I just said before is, between the table drain and the road is where the council non-wetmar issues are, and that's where we're likely to go. Now, when you get to culverts and bridges, we have options. We can either restore the road and cut through it or drill through it, or we can go alongside the bridge, as you would have seen in some of them. So there's options and there's designs for those.
Another falsehood dreamed up by, well, I guess the Greenies, is that this power conduit will run along the road for about 280 k's. Where did they get that one from?
So it's 120 kilometres of road.
Okay, the bottom line. When will this start and how long will it take?
In the absolute best case, you know, early next year we could be doing this. In the absolute best case. Building it. No, I mean, you've got to sign someone up. There's a whole lot of contracts in the next place, right? So, you know, some of those things I can control and some of them I can't control. And looking at a Gantt chart of this, is the best way you could do it is early next year. There are a lot of approvals to go to before that, and we've mapped them out and we're working on them. And so, you know, I know the WETMAR approval process now. I'm not concerned about that. Will it happen sooner than that? You know, this is a sensitive area. We've got a lot of things to jump through. We're aware of that. Shouldn't stop us from making the world better, though. How long would it take? You know, in the best case, again, I would say a year from there to do it properly.
Federal MP for Leichhardt, Warren Ench, brought up an interesting point about Ergon.
You know, there was an approach to Ergon. Ergon actually withdrew and said, no, we cannot provide power up here. For us to do it, the cost of upgrading our infrastructure south of the river was too prohibitive, and therefore we cannot provide power to an extension across the river, even though they do in a couple of spots, in one spot as we know. But that was their reaction. They refused. They said, we don't have an appetite to upgrade our infrastructure, therefore we are not in a position to be able to do it. That's the reason why we had to go as a standalone here. That's the reason why we're, interestingly enough, Ergon's now in the mix with a microgrid. Now, but they don't want to, they didn't want to do it. And in spite of approaches to the state government and to Ergon, etc., even when we had a chairman of Ergon was very keen to proceed, they got stifled. So that's why we are now. One of the positives that we have is that the Douglas Shire owns all of their roads and all of the road easements from north of the ferry. All of them. All of them. Which means to say we can work, they got the authority on that easement, which makes it so much different. We're not having to go to the state government to deal with that, because at this point in time, the state government really had no contribution. In fact, they've actually tried to set up a counter one, which is ridiculous. But nevertheless, the council owns the roads, and more recently, council's come back and said, we are very supportive of what is happening here. And so we've got access to easements. There is only one small patch, I think it's fair to say this, one small area where we actually go through Wet Tropics designated land. And in that area, we're going through about 20 feet below it. So you're not even impacting on the root system, and it's for a you're going from freehold to freehold.
300 meters.
300 meters. That's the only area in the entire network where you're actually going 20 feet under World Heritage listed areas. That's going to, and there has been preliminary discussions with WETMA on this, and they will continue, but that takes away a lot of the issues relating to that. There will be those that will do everything, they'll stand on the head and do anything they can to try and create it, to sort of push their own agendas, and they're entitled to do whatever they like. That will probably act as a little bit of a break on the system, but see where we came from. I mean, when you talk about Richard being involved in 2018, that was done with Arena, okay? So we worked very closely with them. The reason that Arena is not here on this stage is because they couldn't get the state government's approval to work with them. On the second stage, the state government was playing the politics, and so we said, rightio, we'll go past Arena, we engage these guys to do the second stage. There's another short stage, there's another stage now that has been identified through this process in relation to making, because this will give us to shovel ready, but the next phase is to get it financial close, to actually identify and lock in an investor. Now there is almost a fool's cap page of investors. None of them are Chinese, by the way. There are a lot of big companies that are seeking the credit of getting rid of diesel out of here. So they are very, very interested in the technology. They are also interested in making sure that they got that up on their boardroom wall. So there is a lot of interest there. I suspect that there will be an ask financially from government, but there are opportunities there too. And at some stage, I would hope that the state government will come in and be part of this as well, as they are in every other place in the country. If you go to Stephen Island, where there's 50 people, the state government provides the microgrid and the generation, and they do it through Ergon.
It's all diesel though.
But it's all
foreign. In every other place, the state government does it. Except for here.
And that's the reason why we've got involved. We were able to get involved from a federal perspective and leverage on the fact that you're cushioned between two World Heritage areas. because if we'd have been waiting, in fact, the state government legislated against any type of mains equivalent power in the region. Now, as soon as that was lifted, as soon as that was amended, that gave us the window of opportunity. It just so happens, though, from a federal perspective, we are now looking very heavily towards hydrogen generation, and that and there's a $200 million bucket that has been set up for what is it, innovative discrete microgrids. This is the first one that they've done. There's been another round where there's more, and there's another round coming shortly where they're looking at these and focusing on hydrogen. Interestingly enough, more recently the state government has also announced a hydrogen strategy. But whatever the amount, nevertheless, it's a high, and it may well be that can be the hook that we can encourage them to be part of what we're doing here. But anyway, and saying that, so these guys, I'm confident we'll get this done by the end of this year, early next year. Once that happens, we then look at the bigger finance. We'll know exactly, because everybody sort of quotes figures. I read stuff with ad nausea, where people have got they're quoting all sorts of figures from their own individual surveys and their own speculations in relation to costs, etc. They haven't got a bloody clue when you start looking at the factual data that's coming out of this work that's being done by professionals. It's the first time in the history of this place that we've ever had a situation where you've got actually factual information by professionals, world renowned and world-class professionals. So we're getting that information together, and I would hope maybe the local state member, whoever that may be, because this will be after October, whoever that might be, will start to show a little bit of interest in what's happening here. But you know, we are so far, people can make informed decisions now. The first time ever they can actually make informed decisions. They know it's not 280 kilometres, it's 120. They know exactly where the roads go, where the alignment is, etc. They know exactly the how much they require in relation to generation. That's where we are at the moment. Where everything goes well, if everybody sort of comes together and doesn't sort of lodge all sorts of frivolous objections to this, then it could be. At the worst, it could be done at end of next year or early 2022, it could be completed. But that very much depends on how much the community wants to get behind it and how much they want it to drag the chain. The reality is we've progressed it very well. Now, it's in people's own interest to maintain their current systems. If it means you've got to replace something today, then you've got to replace it today. You'll get the benefit of that, though, as you'll get input credits on any of the infrastructure you have. You'll get an input credit into the system once it's done, once it's created. Now, it's as simple as that. Now, if you want to continue to operate now, I mean, I see an email from Toon that says his generator shed itself, his batteries are gone, and he's got no solar anymore. Well, Toon, you're going to have to do something about that, because we're not going to be able to fix your problem today. So that's the reality. It's not going to be fixed today. And so you've got to make decisions based on your own needs at the moment. We are so far advanced on this than it's ever happened before, and we are trying very hard to do that. Now, the other thing that has gone into this discussion as well, those that choose, once this starts to be rolled out, that want to be part of the network, what we are endeavouring to do is, well, first of all, there has to be an inspection on every single property to make sure that it's safe and compliant, that allows it to be connected. So that's another cost that we have to factor in, so that every single property that goes on, that expresses an interest, can be done. And we, you know, very strongly of the view that this is a cost that government needs to pick up, given the disadvantage within this community. So they do those inspections, and it's very much in line with what's from a safety perspective. Now, one of the other, and I suspect that there's going to be a lot of properties here that will not be compliant with a system. And that's another, and make no bones about it, there will be a lot of properties here that are not compliant. Anyway, and it is a safety issue. And one of the other things that we're exploring at the moment is to find a way that there can be some support for those that need to upgrade their systems to bring it so that they are compliant to be able to connect should they choose. And you know, the big users are going to be the businesses, and I suspect there'll be very few of those who are going to opt out and say, no, we don't want to do it, we don't want to connect. That's entirely up to them, but I suspect most of them will. Places like here, like your medical clinic and your hospital are no-brainers, and your schools are no-brainers. They're going to be major benefactors out of something like that. There's no way in the world, and they are major users as well. There's no way in the world that they're not going to connect. And I suspect that you'll see once it's the offer is out there, I suspect there would be very, very few people we say we don't want to do it, because it's certainly going to significantly increase the values of your property if you've got a main, if you're connected or have the capacity to be connected to the grid.
Mayor Michael Kerr says he was very impressed with today's presentation and looks forward to Douglas Shire Council assisting with the grid where they can.
It was good. I think it was very productive. They got their point across, and I think they cleared a lot of facts up. And I think that that's something that's really important, is the communication up here to make sure everyone knows exactly what's going on and not just things that are put on Facebook or on social media. It has to be the truth and the facts. We put a motion through, I think it was one of the first meetings that we had, saying that council will support their efforts. And I think it's really important that, you know, we do support the investigation into finding out whether this is feasible and doable, and then support them in the process.
Now, I did try to talk to Councillor Roy Zamataro on his way out, really to find out if today's presentation had caused him to change his mind. All I got was a terse response. Paul Macon, how are you, mate?
Go away from
me. You changed your mind?
You poked that Go away. Go away.
Oh, well, I tried. For Warren Inch, this is personal, and he's determined to be able to see this grid for the Daintree become a reality and provide power to the people north of the river.
I'd like to be up here to turn on the switch, so in my job, so I would really love to see it. It was one of the reasons that I decided not to step down last time. I'm determined to get it through, and I'll do everything I can to make it happen, and hopefully I'll be here to turn on the switch.